This is Papa Hale speaking, and you are listening to a Wrestling with Words podcast. Visit us at WrestlingWithWords.com and follow us on Twitter at WrestleWords. If you don't, you are not Papa Hale's approved. But remember to always be fired up!
Hey guys, you are listening to the Fancy Wrestling Show here on the Wrestling with Warts Audio Network. I'm Patrick with Danny Danger. Danny, a new week, more wrestling to talk about, so let's get to it. Extreme Rules just happened. Samoa Joe is your number one contender.
Like I told you guys last week, because he's a killer and he kills people. And it doesn't matter if it's four of your top stars or not. He's going to lay him to waste. And that's what he did. Because he's Samoa Joe.
So it will be Brock versus Joe in the Battle of Great Balls.
At the Battle of Great Balls shaking all around the room. Yeah. Flaming and such. Something of that nature. But that's still a little ways to go. They're not going to give us that tomorrow.
No, but they're going to give us to us in July. And I still love the name. I can't get over the fact that the name. And have you seen one of the latest logos where they have the flame that looks like a penis?
Yeah, I did see that one. That one's very classy. It's definitely PG. It's very reminiscent of, say, mid-90s Disney VHS covers where they had weird kind of phallic symbols hidden within the image, like the Little Mermaid, where there's the towers of the palace and a couple of them look like penises. So it's going to be fantastic. I love it when they go PG and then they put a lot of inappropriate symbols and hidden images. That's good old-fashioned family entertainment right there.
It's hilarious. I saw a tweet. Somebody tweeted at Sasha Banks and asked her that, and she agreed that's what it looked like to her. I thought it was hilarious. So Brock versus Joe, I mean, how exciting is this matchup right now in comparison to the other possibilities?
Well, your possibility, you said the big money match was the Demon versus the Beast. Was Finn Balor winning it. But I think, you know, the big program they were hoping for the summer before Braun's injury was, you know, the Hoss fight. Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman. So maybe now we get another program that is a Hoss fight, so to speak, with Joe and Lesnar. But in this case, both guys are a little more versed in an MMA style. So I think if they kind of play that up, it's a very big possibility they could get a little bit of cross, let's say, eyes from different people who might want to see something a little different. I'm not saying they need to do what TNA did with Joe and Kurt Angle and made it that kind of, you know, basically they made it like a part halfway mixed martial arts fight in a cage. That didn't go over as well as they thought. I'm not saying they need to go that route. I'm just saying it might be beneficial if they kind of play up that both guys train a lot in mixed martial arts. Both guys are, you know, submission and ground and pound experts. You know, they kind of give it this, try to make it seem like it's a more of a legitimate fight than just a wrestling sporting contest.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a fun match. I mean, it's not going to be like a 5-star match, nor is it going to be a 30-minute match.
Or the 6-star match. No, not that either.
But there is excitement.
I think it'll be good. It'll be entertaining. You know, if they give it decent build, I think it could be. It could get people interested in the match. I mean, the thing they've been doing with Brock Lesnar for going on 2 years now is supposed to be the marquee. It's supposed to be the importance of just seeing him wrestle. The importance of just seeing him appear. And when he's the champ, and you add that importance of the championships being defended. You know, so I think they try to add those to make the event seem even more special. You know, Joe had to, he had to beat four other people, an Extreme Rules match in order to win this. So you add that as like making it a big deal because of what he had to go through in order to win, and earn the championship match. So I think they could play with it. I think they could make it seem like it's something really big and important.
That said, I don't know if you got any chance to check out the Paul Heyman promo from Monday, but to me, that's
what Sell Lesnar's matches, though. It's Paul Heyman. You know, I mean, that's why they paired them together, because Brock's never been a good talker. If you remember his promo after his WrestleMania match with Kurt Angle, where he says something about landed on my noggin, and he kind of jokes and rubs his head like, no, we don't want to hear you talk in a live mic in front of a crowd. That's why we paired you with Paul Heyman, so you don't have to do that.
You know what? I also thought it was sort of a baby face move for Heyman to get choked out by Samoa Joe. So do we favor Brock Lesnar as in a baby face role here? Or do you think they'll still try to do a heel versus heel?
I think although Brock Lesnar is supposed to be a heel, I think people still cheer him. For the most part, unless he's going against somebody they really like. I think that's it, because yet again, it is the attraction of seeing Brock. He's a long, you know, he's a bigger name. He's a longer tenured WWE guy. He's done, you know, mixed martial arts. He played briefly, very briefly, in the NFL. So I think that's part of the thing is that he can be a face. It just depends on who they put him against. And I think if you play up Joe being a heel, Joe working with, you know, the Authority or whatever they're going by this week, you know, as kind of their hitman who's going out and taking out their enemies, then that aligns Joe more with the heel faction, and then Brock Lesnar kind of becomes a face just because he's facing a heel. The best long-term champions are the ones who can play, who can go back and forth between heel and face, depending on who their opponents are. And I think if they give the opportunity, I think Brock can do that and be the face in this match at least. And then if somebody else challenges him, they can sway him more to the monster heel again.
Yeah, and then, you know, if the SummerSlam program is Brock versus Braun, you know, Braun is still considered a heel even though he's very over with the fans.
Yeah.
But that would be a case where, like you said, sometimes there's an opponent that broadcasting from the is more popular.
Yeah.
And while Braun is a heel, we can't deny that the people love him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's because they've built him like this crusher destroyer. And although he's like a bad guy and he does bad things, like, I mean, there were huge chance in favor of him during the scraps they had, you know, he had with Roman Reigns and all this. And part of that was because the fans didn't like, that's the group of fans that don't like Roman. The other part is because they like Braun. They like seeing him just get in there and just crush people.
To me, it's going to be a fun match. There may be some people who maybe don't like the match because of the age.
Yet again, can still irritate some people because they say, oh, you should be giving younger guys a chance. These guys don't have as many years left in them, etc. But WWE's motto, as it's been, is if people are paying to see these guys, we're going to keep putting them out there, you know? I mean, that's the big thing. That's what we found out with, you know, with Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, and these kind of guys, as they seemingly got a little bit older and a little bit older. You know, if people are still paying to see them, we're going to put them out there. You know, we just might use them a little more sparingly, which they're doing with Brock Lesnar. You know, trying to make it seem as it's a special event when you get to see him wrestle.
In a sense, I think that these guys are right now in a place where, especially with Joe, who knows, you may not have him here for a long time.
Yeah.
So this is the perfect time to have him while he's still new and hot and strong. Because let's be honest, since Samoa Joe came to the WWE, including NXT, He has always been built as this strong monster.
Yeah.
Since he's been on the main roster, he's had a great debut and has been treated very good, even in losses.
Yeah.
Samoa Joe looks like a beast.
And that's what you need going up to somebody to build towards Lesnar. You need people to think that this guy, you know, has the chance to beat Lesnar. If he's taking losses and taking a lot of losses, he's not. People aren't going to take him seriously as a possible threat. But, I mean, you want to talk about guys, you know, getting older in age. I mean, AJ Styles, you know, didn't he just – he just turned 40, you know, just a few weeks ago. And he's – I mean, he's arguably one of the best performers in the world. So age, I don't think, is as big a factor with it as a lot of guys, you know, as it is with some guys and as it may have been in the past. But the biggest thing, like you said, with Samoa Joe – he is getting older. AJ is the same way. So use them to the best of your ability while you can still push these guys at a full-time schedule. While you can still, while they're hot, while they're performing at the top of their game, because in two or three more years, their bodies may start breaking down on them. They may start needing more reduced schedules, or they may not be able to put on the caliber of matches just because their body, you know, their body starts to fall apart on them. Not, you know, I mean, hopefully it doesn't happen to those guys, but that it becomes, once you hit 40, that becomes more and more of a possibility. So you have to use them now while you can.
Absolutely, 100%. Especially, I think, the fact that they showed how over AJ came off.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been saying this for a few weeks now, just how different people open different doors for independent wrestlers. I go back to CM Punk and Daniel Bryan first opening doors for the smaller guys. Then guys like Gargano and Ciampa, again, open doors for cruiserweights and more of the indie darlings to come in.
Yeah.
And then now here you have AJ Styles, who came in, and I think he broke a barrier for the TNA guys.
Not just TNA guys, but also, like we mentioned, guys who are a little bit older. TNA guys, because they saw that just because he's wrestling TNA doesn't mean that people don't know who he is. Just because he wrestled in TNA for so long doesn't mean that he can't be a valuable asset to WWE. But yeah, he seemed to be the first one to kind of kick that door open, and then you saw the influx of guys, now, most of them now in NXT, Robert Roode, Eric Young. You know, James Storm made brief appearances before he decided to ultimately sign back with Impact.
Right. And of course, Samoa Joe and now Gunner has signed with NXT.
Yeah, Gunner's recently signed. I mean, there's still countless guys that we can go that, you know, we're probably not thinking about right now, but.
You could technically count Drew Galloway, but we're not.
No, yeah.
That's a 50-50 there.
Yeah, it depends on which part of his work you look at. If you look at Evolve in the Indies and International, where he was ripping up everywhere, or you say he was, you know, he made a big splash on Impact Wrestling in the short time he was there,
as well as Mickey James. That's another example of somebody who they had before.
There you go, who they had before, but who spent a lot of time in TNA before coming back and doing relatively well. So yeah, so I think these guys are, like you mentioned, breaking down doors, and then other guys, once the doors cracked open a little bit, kick it open. And that's what AJ's doing. That's what Samoa Joe's doing. And WWE's taking faith in these guys and putting the ball in their hands and saying, we believe you can do this, which I think is the biggest thing. It's not necessarily just hiring a guy who used to be in TNA. It's putting him in a top position very quickly.
Can you believe the fact that Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, two guys who should have main-evented and headlined TNA's shows and pay-per-views for years, but were never treated as true headliners and main-eventers.
Yeah, they were always kind of up and down the roster.
They're now, in 2017, headlining WWE pay-per-views.
Yeah, TNA did use them, but they used them up and down. They pushed them towards the top, and they draw them back, and they push them towards the top, and they draw them back down. And then it's, you know, basically whenever an influx of other guys came in, it seemed like guys like Joe and AJ were pushed to the side and pushed back down the roster. So guys like Scott Steiner could come in and headline shows, and guys like, you know, Jeff Jarrett could come back and, you know, they could bring in Bobby Lashley and put him back towards the top, you know? But yeah, 2017 is a very strange time. A lot of things we thought would never happen in WWE are happening, and they're happening with an amazing success rate.
That's another name that can be thrown in there as an example is Jinder Mahal, somebody who was a true jobber since he returned to, you know, to WWE. And since he won the number one contender match for SmackDown Live, that guy has become one of the hottest wrestlers that they have.
Yeah, and that absolutely. And it's taking a chance on guys who you might not have taken chances on in the past. And I think part of that is they realized that they were relying too long on a core roster of guys who were nearing the end of their careers, who were nearing parts where they wanted to take lesser schedules. And so now they realize, like, hey, if we can give the right opportunities to the right guys and push them right and give them the proper stories and builds, these guys can be huge. And that's the, like you said, Jinder Mahal. Like, I don't think even in his first WWE run would people have thought that he would be the top guy as the champion. You know, even when he was pushed really big and he was feuding with Khali and, you know, and all this, and they had him on SmackDown doing all these things. I still don't think anybody thought, even at that time, that this guy was going to be more than a mid-card, you know, Intercontinental U.S. champion at best. And here he is. He's getting great praise. He gets good reactions. He gets the proper reactions from the crowd. Just doing fantastic work. I mean, like I said, 2017 is a weird time. It's a fantastic time because of all the things that are happening. And I think with the gender also shows, you know, gives you a little bit more of that anything can happen, because he was pretty much fighting on, you know, their untelevised shows, main event, or he would make a Raw appearance and he would look strong. He would look pretty good, but he'd still lose. And then he gets thrown into this number one contender spot and everybody's like, yeah, okay, this guy's getting pinned. No, he's winning the thing and he's going on to beat Randy Orton for the championship. So it's just, it's taking chances and doing it right and having it, and people respond properly.
To me, Jinder Mahal is proof that if the writers and the booking committee weren't just lazy and actually took their time to build guys properly, it works.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. It's all about, I mean, professional wrestling is not just about the matches, but it's about the story leading into the matches. It's about the story after the matches. It's about the story during the matches, you know, and all that ties in together with the writers and, you know, the booking powers that be, doing things properly and finding what works properly for specific people in specific situations. Reality show cast off writers aren't always going to know what works best in a professional wrestling setting.
Also, the fact that I understand that at this point in wrestling, many people say that wins and losses don't matter. I consider that a scapegoat to bad booking.
Yeah.
But look, since Jinder won and became the number one contender, he hasn't lost.
Yeah, that's it. He has not lost. He hasn't lost these non-title matches. You know, he hasn't taken pinfalls and tag matches. The guy's looked like a beast. He looked like a beast, and with the help of the Singh brothers, he can now, like, you know, he can still come off looking powerful, but then, you know, somebody like Randy Orton doesn't look too terrible, you know, getting defeated by Jinder, because essentially he was fighting three guys, you know? So Randy still looks decent. He doesn't look like he just got beat by a no-name guy who stepped out of the shadows of, you know, of somebody else. I mean, of the three guys, when 3MB was there, I don't think anybody would have guessed that Jinder Mahal would be the first to win a top championship in WWE, especially being that he was the first one let go.
Well, that was another misstep.
Well, yes, and there were. But that's what I'm saying. There's been several missteps, but if a guy works hard and he works hard to get himself ready and become the best he can be, they're going to take a chance on him. And he's passed every test and every chance they've given him with flying colors.
Who needs to get this type of treatment right now? Who in WWE needs special attention and smart booking to be strong again?
Who could be a big money player if done right?
Correct.
Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose has a following, okay? And his following may be kind of unusual, but I think they can expand that. But I don't think him being kind of this goofy, jokey guy is the Dean that people want to see. They want to get behind a guy who's crazy, but not like silly crazy. They want to get behind a guy who's crazy, he's intense, he gets in there and fights and brawls. You know, he does what he needs to get it. He doesn't mind getting his hands dirty to get a win. You know, like, make Dean Ambrose more of an anti-hero type good guy, as opposed to this goofy, jokey kind of, oh, I kind of don't really care as long as I get people to laugh kind of guy. You know, like, I think that he could be a big money player as a good guy. And then, of course, they could always take him down the much darker route and put him towards a heel, as he was so successful as Jon Moxley on the independent scene. He was always a heel, and he was crazy, and he talked trash and made people pay to want to see him get his butt whooped. And I think he can do that. But yet again, it comes down to, how are they going to portray him? How are they going to build him properly? Because, I mean, it was even when he went to WrestleMania, when Dean Ambrose fought Brock Lesnar, nobody really had any inkling that Dean Ambrose was going to be Brock Lesnar. And if you did, then that's just because you're a big Dean Ambrose fan, not because of anything that the writing or the booking had to do with it. That was just wishful thinking on anybody's part. But they could build him up to be this, to be a top level guy who could carry, you know, who could be a main player for several years if just done right.
Yeah, another guy that I think can use this type of booking is Rusev.
He kind of fell off the face of the earth for a while there because Lana started getting more over than he did.
Yeah, and he looked great against Cena.
Yeah.
Until he started jobbing to him. Then they brought him right back up and rebuilt him afterwards. Yeah. But then they stuck him with...
Yeah, when they started put the League of Nations or whatever, they started
The League of Nations. When they did that, I mean, again, they just had him as another mid-card act, it felt like.
Yeah.
Because those guys were just jobbing to all the babyfaces every Monday.
Yeah. And then it seemed like after that kind of fell apart, they really haven't done much with him since. But yeah, he definitely could. I mean, they proved that he could, leading him into these fights with Cena and everything. You know, that he could, that if pushed properly, he could be taken as a guy who was tough enough and strong enough to beat almost anybody. So yeah, he could, I mean, even without the evil foreigner kind of gimmick, he can still be pushed up that way again. It just takes time. But it got to a thing where it seemed that Lana was getting a bigger reaction than he was, and she was playing into it and playing into it, and people wanted to see her more than they did him. And so that, I think that's kind of when they kind of cooled him apart. And with Lana returning on TV now, you know, it doesn't, as a wrestler,
she's challenging for the women's championship, Money in the Bank.
Yeah. So hopefully she's been training hard, but if you keep them separate, I think you can get Rusev back to a top level as a bad guy. It's just when he was with her, people would cheer him because they knew that they were going to see her.
And not only that, but SmackDown Live needs some good heels because you have Randy Orton right now, you have AJ Styles, and then you have Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, top good guy.
And then you have Sami Zayn.
Yeah, another top good guy, or could be used as a top good guy. That should have been my first pick, is Sami Zayn. You can make money off Sami Zayn if you do it the right way. But having him lose to Baron Corbin 7 times, and then when he finally beats Baron Corbin, you make him disappear. Or having him lose to Kevin Owens a bunch of times, and when he finally beats Kevin Owens, Sammy disappears and Kevin's the one that gets pushed ahead. That's not the way you keep this guy hot. He could be, you know, Daniel Bryan level, every man fighting from underneath the whole time and overcoming. Yet again, he just needs the right storytelling. He just needs the right backing to get him that way. And people will believe it because he comes, yet again, he comes to as a relatable everyman type guy.
John Cena comes back in July.
Yes, that's true. You are under a big lack for bad guys.
Yeah, you need some strong heels.
Yeah, to take on all those baby faces.
WWE has its work cut out for them, but they can't do it. You know, I know there's a lot of WWE hate out there, but at the end of the day, it's pro wrestling. The formula is always going to be somewhat the same.
Yeah.
I think what Vince McMahon needs to do is kind of like, okay, sure, you're selling entertainment, but come on, focus on the little things that make this business make sense for the fans.
Yeah.
It's not a calculus test they're trying to figure out.
Professional wrestling, what made it so popular, is very, very basic. The struggle of good versus evil. Clear-cut, you know, good guys, and clear-cut bad guys fighting for what's right for championships, you know? The championships that mean something. And that's part of the thing, too. They can do it. We've seen them do it before, time and time and time again. They just need to punch the right people into the right formula.
WWE could make so much more money if they just weren't sometimes lazy. But I don't even want to say they were lazy. You know, WWE just has a lot of people who are not experienced in this business writing.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of the problem. But, you know, now we're seeing more former wrestlers producing matches, being involved in this more. So to me, that's promising.
Moving in the right direction again, yeah.
Right, because, you know, you get these writers and they write stuff, but, you know, the producers can tweak stuff, can possibly say, let's try this, let's try that differently. You also have to allow the good talkers to do their job, to not be so scripted. I understand script those who can't be good in the mic. And also, I understand you don't want any wrestlers to say something they shouldn't say.
Yeah.
To the ones that are really good talkers, give them a couple of bullet points.
It'll feel more natural, therefore people will buy into it more. If it feels too scripted, people just, they kind of tune out a little bit.
They can do it. They need to trust some of these guys and see, okay, well, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then... And they can try it on the house shows.
Yeah.
Test it. See, okay, we're going to give you bullet points. Let's see how you do. If they do well, hey, if you can do this on TV, I bet you nobody's, you know, telling, you know, writing word for word promos to Triple H.
No, of course not. He writes those word for word. And then he memorizes them in a few hours and then goes out there and says them in front of the public like everybody else without stuttering or spacing or stopping and, you know, making all the right motions and movements and facial expressions that are cued in the notes in between the promo. Just like everybody else. In between all the mark picks he takes with new champions.
And also sending, you know, title belts to non-wrestling championship winners.
Yes, that too.
I love Money in the Bank. I'm a huge fan of the concept. One of my favorite gimmick matches. Are you excited that, you know, we're going to see the women's Money in the Bank as well?
Yeah, because I feel like they're doing a bit better job building into this than they did with some of the other quote-unquote women's firsts. You know, like when they... We're having Hell in a Cell, so we're just going to put women in Hell in a Cell just because we want to say that we put women in Hell in a Cell. Like, the feud was going on. They're like, oh, you guys are still feuding. Well, here you go in a cell. You're going to main event the show, but it's not going to be the blow-off of your feud. You're still going to keep fighting. I felt that that one was kind of rushed and kind of forced. I felt that when they're like, oh, the women are headlining Raw with a no DQ match, that seemed a little pushed and forced too. But I think this is flowing together a little more naturally. You know, they said, oh, they're going to do it. And they're like, and they're going to take time to build up, you know, the women's, the importance the women are taking into it, the fear and the trepidation they have, as well as, you know, how bad they all want to win to say that they won in the first, you know, all women's Money in the Bank match. So I think they're going about this a lot better way. Yet again, with the build and the story, not just the match itself.
Yeah, and I also think that the fact that they're letting the women have this match as well, it shows that they're at least progressing with allowing the women to do more. I mean, we've seen how much more they've been doing, putting focus on the women in on their roster. Giving them this type of match, I think, is another great one. So kudos to them.
Yes, and hopefully the women can not only perform at the high level, but also manage to stay safe.
So it should be a fun match. I don't think that any of my favorites will win. At this point, I can see Carmella winning this.
That's a scary thought.
Very. But the gimmick will work well for her.
It could.
So, Danny, New Japan talk here. Will Ospreay, Kushida, Best of Super Juniors Finals. Put one heck of a match. Kushida wins the Best of Super Juniors.
Yet again, my call, not yours.
Probably my favorite Will Ospreay match that I have ever seen.
You rate this one even better than his first meeting with Kushida before he was officially signed. Yeah. When they brought him in, gave him that title shot, and he kind of wowed everybody. But at the same time, you know, like, he and Kushida played the good story. Essentially, Kushida's trying to ground him and break his arm. And Will's trying to pick up speed and keep moving and keep the acrobatic stuff to keep to connect with moves and also keep Kushida off his game. So you think this one, they were able to play into that much better than the previous contest.
It was a much well-rounded performance for Will Ospreay. Much better selling, much better wrestling. It wasn't all flippy spots and dives. And that's what, to me, made it exciting. Danny, keep in mind, I like to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling live when I can. All right, yeah. So I'm watching this 6:30 a.m. You have to be doing a good job to keep me excited.
Yeah, to get you jumping up and down and into the match. Kushida pulls off the win.
Kushida won in fantastic fashion.
And Kushida moves to, yet again, challenge Hiromu.
Which some people thought it was too soon. Some people thought it is the perfect time. I was fine with it either way. I didn't have Kushida as my pick because I was rooting for Hiromu to win it. But this sets up their match for Dominion. So let's take a look at the Dominion card because it's heading into the LA shows the 1st and 2nd of July. We're going to have quite a show. Opening match.
Standard. Four guys. Your legends. You give them time to come in, hit all the big moves everybody wants to see. And then we get on with the rest of the show.
And then all titles get defended. First, let me talk about the non-title match. Cody versus Michael Elgin. Of course, this match is scheduled to happen at Elgin's Glory Pro. But it looks like New Japan decided to beat him to the punch.
Take it first, yeah. On a bigger stage. And that's, you know, and I'm pretty sure Elgin understands that. But he'll be the first one to be able to do it in the United States.
So then we have a gauntlet match for the Never Open Way 6-Man Tag Team Championship. Los Ingobernables de Japón will be defending against the Bullet Club team of Bad Luck Fale, Hangman Page, and Yujiro Takahashi versus Chaos, the team of Ishii, Yano, and Yoshihashi versus Suzuki-Gun's Taishi, Kanemaru and Zack Sabre Jr. versus Taguchi Japan, Juice Robinson, Ricochet, and Taguchi.
That's
just when we thought we had enough factions in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
No, you never have enough factions.
All right, so let's go through the whole list. David Finlay, Dragon Lee, Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Kushida, Nakanishi, Elgin, Ricochet, its leader Taguchi, Kojima, and Yoshitatsu.
Wow, so it's pretty much just about everybody who was not currently aligned with a faction. They just like threw them all there together. It's like the Union of Underappreciated Wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, they all have matching shirts.
It's a heck of a lineup, though. I mean, it's a lot of top guys.
Who do you like in this match? Do you think the Los Ingobernables retain, or they go somewhere else, the belts?
Well, the thing is with these, the never open weight six-mans, the belts seem to flip around a lot. And I think in a gauntlet match, the chances of them to flip around are even more so. And I think at this point, people expect that. So I think they're going to, I think somehow Los Ingobernables are going to find a way to win this and to hold on to the belts. And I think that's going to be the big shocker, is that, you know, there's so many other teams, these belts are notorious for this people having it and then they lose on the first defense. This people having it and then they lose on the first defense. I think LIJ is going to find a way, you know, in their usual type shenanigans, potentially, to continue winning and keep this and win through this gauntlet match.
All right, so next we have the Junior Tag Team Championships on the line, as Roppongi Vice will defend against the Young Bucks.
And it's fireworks every time these guys get in the ring. Yet again, they trade wins back and forth and back and forth. So it could go either way. You know, I mean, it's pretty much a coin toss whenever A, these two teams fight, and B, with yet again the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships are ones that are notorious for changing hands quickly.
Knowing that they're going to L.A., I'm going with the Young Bucks taking the belts.
You think they're going to do the Bucks? Okay. Well, I mean, at the same time, well, that's true. It would be in the Bucks, quote, you know, hometown, so to speak, as their Southern California boys. But at the same time, you know, you could, I mean, Rocky and Trent are you know, front American wrestlers as well. So I know we talked about going into when they go to LA that they may have a few more American champions, or at least spotlight more the American champions. But I mean, Roppongi Vice aren't exactly unknowns in the United States either, and it's because of a lot of their work with Ring of Honor and the exposure they've gotten there. I'm still calling this one a coin toss. It could go either way. I'm not even going to try to pick, because I'll probably pick the wrong side of the coin.
Then the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship is on the line. War Machine defending against the Guerrillas of Destiny.
I like these matches. War Machine is doing amazing in Japan. You know, I mean, because they're big and they're hard-hitting gaijins, you know. They're doing well against all the teams that they're playing against, fighting against, and competing against. I think you let War Machine keep it a little bit longer. I think War Machine comes out on top in this fight.
I think I will go with Guerrillas of Destiny taking the title, so we'll see another title change. So next then we have the aforementioned Hiromu Takahashi versus Kushida for the Junior Heavyweight Championship.
I want to say Hiromu retains. And I think it's because since he came back from his American excursion with Ring of Honor and stuff, he's been a very unpredictable opponent for most people. He's this difficult to predict what he's going to do, his moveset, his style. He's the epitome of throw caution to the wind. And I think somebody even, you know, he's bested Kushida whenever they've encountered each other and fought. So I think that he'll continue to do that. And I think, you know, there may come a time when Kushida eventually gets the big win over him, but I don't think Dominion's it. I think that comes down the line. I think Hiromu is still doing great. I think he's doing a lot to bring extra attention to the division, for new reasons, because of what he's doing. It's not what people traditionally expect from junior heavyweight matches in New Japan, or what they've come to expect over the last few months, maybe even the last few years. So I think Hiromu's done it. And Kushida's even said himself in interviews, he's like, I wanted to be the guy that changed the face of the junior heavyweight division. I wanted to be the guy who did for this division what Liger did for this division 20 years ago. But he said, but I will admit that Hiromu's doing it better than I was. Hiromu's been doing a better job getting more eyes to it and making it more of a must-watch division than I have. So I think for those kind of reasons, they keep it on Hiromu for the time being, you know, and see who what other kind of challengers they can build up to face him.
Yeah, I'm going with Hiromu here. He should definitely win. Continue looking as strong as he has been. I thought he lost more than he needed to at the Best of the Super Juniors.
A lot of people lost more than we thought they should have at the Super Juniors. It was a seemingly very loss heavy. You know, there wasn't one or two people who dominated. Everybody took a lot of losses in that.
And not only that, there's a few more rematches you could see for Hiromu to get his wins back.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one thing they love to do once they leave these tournaments, the G1 and the Super Juniors, is, you know, hey, I beat you in the tournament. Now you're going to give me a shot at your title. So I think there are several matches that they could do that with Hiromu.
For the Never Open Weight Championship in a Lumberjack Death Match, Minoru Suzuki versus Hiroki Goto.
So I know what a Lumberjack match is. Guys around the ring, you know, essentially to keep the wrestlers from escaping. If a guy goes outside, the Lumberjacks are supposed to throw him back in. Sometimes they beat him up first, then throw him back in. What exactly makes it different being a Lumberjack death match versus just a regular Lumberjack match?
Lumberjacks will be given more of an encouraged...
to try to get in there and rough the guys up when they can,
exactly.
Kind of thing? Okay.
I mean, so I assume that there'll be probably some weapons that'll be allowed to be used.
Maybe so. I assume you'll probably have guys from Chaos and Suzuki-Gun as Lumberjacks. Maybe you get the whole thing where the Lumberjacks end up kind of fighting against each other, shenanigans happen, and the match is decided somewhere along the way.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so do you see Suzuki or Goto taking this one?
I definitely like to see Suzuki keep the belt. There's no reason to give it back to Goto.
Not right away. I still really enjoy Suzuki's stuff. I think he does really well. People like him and they respect him, but he's at the same time he's good at getting the fans to boo him in that same respect. You know, they respect him, they come out and they love him, but at the same time he's cocky, he's this, you know, trash talker. He goes against what the traditional Japanese approach to professional wrestling is, with respect and honor, and I think he does so well at that he gets under the people's skin. And so I think that it's best for him to continue to do that and find a way to win, you know, amongst the shenanigans.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Zack Sabre Jr. in Suzuki-Gun doesn't last.
Okay.
I'd love to see Sabre. Defeat Suzuki.
Okay.
And add another championship to his waist.
Yeah.
Or chest.
Another. Yeah. Yeah, he usually wears them up around the chest, right? Yeah. I could see that down the line. But I think Sabre's also doing things differently. Most places he goes, he's cheered. He's the underdog good guy. I think as part of Suzuki-Gun, he's able to mix it up a little bit. And to me, that's kind of interesting just to be able to see him do that for a change as opposed to just about everywhere else he goes.
So next we have Naito defending the IWGP IC title against Tanahashi.
Now that's if the title can get there in one piece. If anybody has been following, apparently Naito's abuse of the championship, throwing it around and all this, actually has started to break apart the championship. It very well could end up looking like the first WWF Hardcore Championship where there's tape holding it together. Plates are breaking off, but plates are bending, things like that, because he abuses it and beats it up. But, I mean, it works. It works because it gets people mad at him. You know, he's disrespecting such and such, such and such. You know, all this, you know, the respect and the pride that's supposed to come from being a champion. He doesn't give a crap about it. I think he finds a way to continue to hang on to that. He found ways to beat Tanahashi before when people thought that he couldn't do it. He found ways to beat Okada when people thought he couldn't do it. So I think he continues his winning ways. Sees his destino continue. And I think he wins that and takes whatever pieces of the belt wherever he wants to take them.
And in your main event,
the first ever 6 stars match,
Okada defends the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against the cleaner, Kenny Omega.
I have a hard time betting against Okada. I have to go with Okada again. I think Okada is still one of the best. I think he's still proving that. He's proving media-wise that he's still popular. He's bringing in, you know, with him as the champion in the Okada era, so to speak, more and more and more eyes are coming to New Japan. And I think they continue that and keep the belt on him, even though they're coming to the United States. I think that you're still going to keep Okada that, because I think Okada holds at least a little bit of notoriety in the United States. Whereas Kenny Omega might, but yet again, I don't know if the time's right for Omega. I don't think it's right. So I think you keep it on Okada. The Rainmaker is not ready to go to the wayside just yet.
Well, that is where you and I will once again, with no surprise, defer. If anybody's been paying attention, I have a wrestling man crush on Kenny Omega.
We all have our few. That's okay.
But let's be honest. If you're going to put the title on Kenny Omega, you're going to do it right now while you can make as much money as possible.
Yeah, no, that's true.
He could be potentially be headlining, you know, two already sold out New Japan wrestling shows in Long Beach. Also in July, they're going to have, you know, elite merchandise and probably more New Japan Pro Wrestling merch on Hot Topic stores.
That's true. Yeah. In the actual stores, not just on websites or anything. Yeah.
So you want to monetize Kenny Omega right now, being as popular as he is, considered by many as one of the best wrestlers in the world. Dude, I mean, you don't know if he's going to sign next year or not.
That's true.
You know, even if you only have him as champion through the summer, you have him as champion, make money while you have him. At the end of the day, you're making your money on merch.
Well, now here's the thing. Now, I thought that the Young Bucks and Kenny owned most of the rights to the Elite merchandise. I thought that was why they were splitting from the Bullet Club into the Elite, because they still held most of the property rights to that. I don't know if New Japan gets as much of that money as they would of just straight Bullet Club merch.
But they can make Kenny Omega New Japan Pro Wrestling Champion shirts, just like they did the Kenny Omega Tekken shirt.
Yeah, they can do more stuff like that. That's true. It's very true.
With that happening, you can do all these things. So you have to do whatever you can. Kenny Omega be the champion through the summer. He can lose the title at King of Pro Wrestling if they don't want him to have the title until Wrestle Kingdom. But who knows? Right now, it's the time. You have to make as much as you can with this guy, because you don't want something like what happened last year to happen.
So you think it would be wiser to have Kenny Omega enter America as the champion rather than, say, winning the championship on American soil?
Yes, because I do not think that they would do a title change for their biggest title in a foreign land.
Okay.
They would hold it for Japan.
That's true. That's why they're making the new belt, basically. So that one can be defended and lost and won in the United States.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that is the Dominion happening on Sunday, June 11th, 3 a.m. Eastern Time. I may or may not be watching live, but I will probably will on New Japan World. And it will have English commentary.
Who's doing this commentary this time?
It's Kevin Kelly and Cyrus, the Virus, Don Callis.
Okay, Don Callis. Okay, so they're with that pairing still. Okay.
Yeah, now, by the time people are listening to this, the Road to Dominion show happening Friday morning will have already aired. But that's headlined by The Elite versus Okada and Roppongi Vice. So that should be a fun six-man tag.
Yeah.
No Ospreay on Dominion.
Interesting that they're just kind of giving him that little bit of time off, I guess.
I mean, they brought everybody else back. I mean, they brought Sabre, Alien, Cody. This show's stacked. It has everybody except for Ospreay.
They want it stacked leading into the big show for Sunday.
This weekend, though, for us, live, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment at the Southern Fried Game Room Expo. It will be Bobby and Stan's
most excellent tag team tournament. Yes, indeed. The second one last year was won by the Carnies. We already talked about this. UI and the Scream Queen kind of gave who we thought were our predictions, but the time is upon us. Friday night is the round one matches, as well as recently announced Chris Mayne looking, you know, coming from being the Battle Royal King, now looking for an opportunity to show that he is just more than the Battle Royal guy against the former champion, Jimmy Rave. Then we move on to night two, where we get the semifinals and the finals of the tag team tournament, as well as a Roar Grudge match featuring Priscilla Kelly and Su Young, which yet again, we talked about previously with the Scream Queen. But it's fantastic shows. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. And there's a bunch of, you know, if you pay the extra money, there's piles and piles of retro arcade games and video games to play. I think on Saturday they said they were going to have some of the AWE wrestlers and crew out there kind of participating in some of these gaming tournaments and things like that. So, you know, not only can you see these guys and gals get beat up, but you might also be able to best them in your favorite arcade game.
Yeah, so for more information on tickets, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment on Facebook, ATL Wrestling ENT on Twitter. It's going to be a fun two-night tournament. Now, if you don't want to hear spoilers, close your ears for 5 minutes. But Danny, we know that our predictions, which you mentioned we already made a few weeks ago, are out of, you know, we lost because the Carnies have announced that they'll be at Nova Pro on Saturday night, basically giving away that they're not going to get past this first round.
Or somehow if they do, it, you know, somebody else is given their spot. Basically, either they're losing or it's just complicating things further. So do you and I want to try to take another stab at who we think is going to win, since it's kind of our main pick is kind of pretty much told everybody that they're not going to be there the second night. Even if they win their first round match, they're going to be elsewhere the second night.
Yes, I think it's fair for us to pick just the whole winner of the tournament, since our winner is not going to be there.
As strong as they looked at their only other AWE showing, I have to go with the Dark City Fight Club. I think because they're strong, they're powerful, and although they wrestled together a lot more in the past years, I think the last several years they haven't. And somehow I think that that's going to play to their advantage, because they could bring up old tricks, they could bring up new tricks, and they could keep a lot of people guessing as to what condition they're going to be in. If they come looking anything like they did at Show of the Year 2 in AWE in December of 2016, I think they have a possibility to take the whole thing.
You know, Danny, I think this is one time of those times where I'm also going to agree with you. And Dan facing against the Devil's Rejects would be fantastic.
That's a Hoss fight of Hoss fights right there.
And then the winner of that probably face The Carnies, as they
the
still
anyways.
Are deserving of a rematch from losing the belts. So we have substituted the Carnies with the Dark City Fight Club. So at least we picked a team from that bracket to still win it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Because we still have no clue who the IndyCar Mafia is.
Yeah, and I honestly have not seen quite a lot of those teams wrestle before. I might have heard of them before. Like, I've heard of the Gymnasty Boys, but I've never seen them wrestle as a team. And a few others, you know? So, of the teams that I know and I know what they're capable of, I gotta go with Dark City Fight Club.
So, again, so you can get your tickets at SouthernFriedGameRoomExpo.com. It's gonna be a fun time. June 9th and June 10th. Bell time is 6:30 p.m. for both. At the Marriott Renaissance Waverly Hotel in Atlanta, Georgia. We look forward to seeing you there. We'll be there. Say hi to us. I don't think they sell beer there, so...
I don't think they actually sell anything. From my understanding is they don't even have a snack bar from last year, from what I've heard, because they're, you know, rightfully so, they don't want people spilling stuff all over the games. Come by, say hi. Shake our hands, give us a hug if you don't smell too bad. We'll love to see you, talk with you about wrestling. That's what we do.
Yeah, now Danny and I will be at the meetup dinner on Saturday afternoon before the show.
Yeah, so you can buy us a drink there.
Yes, the Jock and Jills,
the fans of AWE Group would have your information on that on Facebook. It's an open group now. You don't have to be invited. You can just jump on in.
That's Fans of AWE on Facebook. And with that, that was our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Every week, always a joy to talk some pro wrestling. And we are glad that you have made us part of your listening schedule. As there are hundreds of podcasts you could be listening to. We definitely do appreciate you listening to us. If you're enjoying the show, subscribe to the Wrestling with Words Audio Network. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Android devices. Soon to come to the Google Play Store.
Hey, that's good. More ways that our friends and fans can find and listen.
And not only just our podcast, but also the Wrestling with Reaction podcast that I host as well. And the many other podcasts on the network. So definitely rate and review. We would love to get your feedback on that. Remember, iTunes may not have 6 stars, but that's why you can add a 6-star or more on the comment section. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.